Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you programs from radio's past. I'm your host, Mark Levenier. There's drama in this hour. Later on, Will Rogers Jr. stars in Rogers of the Gazette. But first, it's Jessica Tandy and Hume Cronin in The Marriage, this NBC episode from December 13th, 1953.
Jessica Tandy and Hume Cronin in The Marriage. With the conviction that marriage remains the most popular domestic arrangement between friendly people, NBC takes pleasure in presenting by transcription one of the most distinguished couples in the American theater, Jessica Tandy and Hume Cronin, as Liz and Ben Marriott in the new dramatic series, The Marriage. Philosophers have always been found in odd walks of life. Socrates was a sandal maker, Spinoza a lens grinder, Omar a tent maker, and Mr. Stankovich sells newspapers. Of course, he isn't as famous as Socrates, except on our block. He runs the newsstand where I stop every morning on the way to my office. I generally plan to leave the house at least 10 minutes early because buying a newspaper from Mr. Stankovich is a dignified social ritual, like drinking tea with a mandarin.
Well, Mr. Marriott, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Stankovich.
Here you are. Times.
Anything in it you particularly recommend? Anything new in politics, Mr. Stankovich?
Politics. Mr. Marriott, politics is like a glass of tea.
Like what?
A glass of tea. It may look clear and sweet, but if you take a great big gulp, you burn yourself.
Don't you want to know what's happening in the world?
In the little time I got, I read the almanac. I figure if something in the newspaper is important, sooner or later it will show up in the World Almanac. And in the meantime, you are learning something interesting. Did you know in the Bronx Zoo there is a worm farm?
No. No, I can't say that I did.
It is under the lion house.
Oh, I see.
The platypus eats them.
The lions?
The worms.
I can see why you prefer the almanac.
Sure. In the papers is too much trouble. You know why?
No, I don't.
It's people going with no hats.
You think that's it?
Of course. The human head is not made to stand up against so much weather. All this hot and cold and an air-conditioned cafeterias, that shrinks up the head.
You know, I've been noticing a little congestion. I thought it was sinus.
Shrinking. It makes people irritable. They mumble more. Didn't you notice?
Yes, and revolving doors go round faster.
You are right.
Yeah, I think I'll buy a beret this morning. Well, goodbye, Mr. Stankovich.
Mr. Marriott.
Yeah?
1 minute.
Yes.
You are a lawyer.
I am?
I wonder, maybe you could do me a favor. I mean, I can pay, but...
What's the matter? Are you in trouble?
My boy, Stanley. A policeman came to the house. He's got to go to court.
What's he done?
I don't know. I don't understand. I am very worried, Mr. Marriott.
Have you talked to the boy?
He don't listen to me no more. I don't see him hardly. I am in the stand till midnight. His mother, she's gone 3 years.
Oh, I didn't know. I'm sorry.
Well, why should you know? Look, Mr. Marriott, I don't know about courts and judges, but I want Stanley should get every opportunity. The figures in the almanac and juvenile delinquency is very upsetting. I looked them up.
Of course, Mr. Stankovich. You bring the boy around tonight.
Well, I couldn't come with him, Mr. Marriott. I got to keep the stand open. But he could come along. I wouldn't be much help to you anyway.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Marriott. Thank you.
I thought of Mr. Stankovich's theory of irritability, and I could almost feel my head shrinking. All day, I expected my hat to slide down over my ears. That night, I shipped the kids off to their rooms early.
But, Ben, you never have clients at the house.
This is a special client, a little boy.
Oh?
The news dealer's son. He asked me to see him.
Maybe I'd better make some cocoa.
That'd be a nice idea, with a marshmallow on top. Now, that always loosens up kids.
Have you ever handled a children's case before?
No. but I ought to know about kids. I'll just treat him the way I treat Pete.
All right, Perry Mason.
Now, Liz, don't frighten the child. I'll get it.
Mr. Murray?
Yes?
I'm Stan Stankovich.
Oh. Oh, yes, I was expecting someone a little... Well, come on in.
Thanks.
Come right in. Liz? This is Stanley.
It is?
Hiya.
How old are you, Stanley?
15. I'm big for my age. Smoke?
Thank you. Not now.
You mind if I do? It calms my nerves.
Oh, no. Go right ahead.
Look, Counselor. If we're going to talk about this rap, maybe we better be alone, huh?
Oh, I was just going.
Liz, you better forget about making the, you know...
Not even with a marshmallow on top?
Marshmallow?
Nothing. Now, Stanley, your father asked me to talk to you about this little trouble.
Now, wait a minute, Counselor. Pop is great for selling kids comic books, but what he knows about the law you could stick in your ear. Before I take you on, I want to ask a couple of questions. You had any experience?
Why, yes, I've had experience.
Criminal law or just wills and malarkey like that?
I've defended criminal cases.
What's your average?
Average?
Yeah. What's your won and lost percentage?
Against right or left-handed judges.
Oh, a wise guy, huh? Harry warned me you'd probably play it cagey.
Harry?
Oh, he's a friend of mine. He warned me to be careful what kind of a mouthpiece I picked up.
Well, you tell Harry that Jerry Giesler is busy and they made Leibowitz a judge, so you're stuck with me.
Yeah, I guess I am.
Now, maybe you better tell me what this is all about.
Oh, it's nothing. A technicality.
Like what?
Like I was out of school a couple of days.
You mean a truancy?
Well, not exactly. I stayed out because of the kid.
What kid?
The kid I beat up.
Is that it? Assault?
No. They thought I was trying to shake the kid down for protection money.
Were you?
Of course not. He owed me that money fair and square.
You did, eh? Why?
Well, he lost it in a poker game.
You were playing poker with him?
Certainly not.
Well, that's good.
I was dealing for the house. You know, you gotta keep deadbeats in line or your reputation suffers. That's what Harry says.
Harry again?
Well, yeah, he owns half the game. We use the boys' locker room.
You were running a poker game in school?
You gotta go where the money is.
In school?
Now, look, Counselor, don't you think you better get down to cases? I gotta beat this rap. I could have my head handed to me.
Now, wait a minute, Stanley. You're going into children's court. They won't keelhaul you. They're gonna help you.
Listen, Counselor, that kind of help I need like a hole in the head. Now, let's figure an angle.
After Stanley left, Liz fixed me a drink. I needed it badly.
Here you are, darling. Cocoa with a melted marshmallow.
The next morning, I met Stanley in the waiting room of Children's Court. The waiting room had a distinct Dickens flavor about it. It's always pretty crowded with worried mothers and fathers and crying children.
Over here, Counselor.
Morning, Stanley.
What's good about it? Listen, Harry and I have the angle all figured out.
You do?
Self-defense. I say the other kid came at me with a knife.
Did he?
Well, what's the difference? It's a good angle, isn't it?
It's dandy. Come on, we'll be late. The courtroom was dark and high-ceilinged. The judge's bench was raised so that it towered over us. I've seen more cheerful surroundings in general sessions at a murder trial. The attendant evidently came with the decor.
All right, kid, what are you in for? Who did you murder?
A big slob in a blue uniform with a chicken inspector's badge.
Why, you... What's your name?
Stankovich.
I asked the kid. Come on, I haven't got all day. Trouble with children these days, they got no manners.
The trouble with you is you got
Stanley.
No...
Stanley. Excuse me, bailiff. Can you tell
Can't
me how...
Can't you see I'm writing?
I just wanted to ask
you... I only got two hands. Why don't you teach the kid manners? Like father, like son.
I'm not his father. I'm his lawyer.
Congratulations. Now stop wasting my time. I'm busy.
The attendant left us in the dismal courtroom to wait. Finally, the judge came in, his hands full of papers. He was a round little man in a business suit. He came down in front of the high bench and spoke to Stanley.
What's your name, boy?
Stanley Stankovich.
They call you Stan?
Yeah, they do.
Mm-hmm. You the father?
I'm Ben Marriott, Your Honor, of counsel.
Oh. Well, you know, Counselor, although the children have the right of counsel, we don't often have lawyers in this court.
I gathered by this time that lawyers were not customary in children's court. Judge Falls started the long climb up to his bench and spent a solid 15 minutes juggling papers with a court attendant.
Garson, why wasn't the delinquency petition affixed to the record?
It's in the file, Your Honor.
Well, I don't see it.
Excuse me, Your Honor. This child...
Patience, Counselor, patience.
I'm representing this boy, sir. I don't think it does him any good to sit here and wait this way.
Oh, you don't, Counselor. Well, let me point out that this is not a criminal court. You are not here to win a case.
I know. I'm here to help this child. Presumably you are too, sir.
Yeah. Go on, Counselor.
This is my first experience here, Your Honor. I was able to see the whole procedure through the boy's eyes. Any disturbed child would be scared half out of his wits before he even got into your chamber.
You think so?
Of course. Even the architecture's frightening.
Hmm?
And the attendants shuffle the children round like cattle. I looked up the Children's Court Act.
Oh.
This isn't what it had in mind at all.
So you looked up the Children's Court Act?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, let me congratulate you.
I beg your pardon?
Not many people bother to do that. Many lawyers, when they come in here, bring their habits from the criminal courts with them. A lawyer who wins a case in here loses a child.
From the shuffling around they get, I'm surprised that they're not lost before they ever get in here.
Mr. Marriott, I...
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
So am I. You're quite right. We're shamefully understaffed here. Untrained people, not enough probation officers, not enough... Oh, well, that doesn't help this young man. Stan, suppose you tell me all about it.
Oh, yes, Your Honor. Ladies and gentlemen of the... Well, hey, Ivan Rook, there ain't no jury.
Judge Fall adjudicated the case and ordered a temporary disposition. I explained it all to Stanley outside.
He what? I've been crossed. I've been sold out.
Now, Stanley...
I should have known. Harry warned me.
Now, wait a minute.
I could have beat this rap standing on my ear. Why didn't you pull that self-defense angle?
It wasn't true.
Well, what's the difference? You're a lawyer, aren't you?
I'm afraid that Harry must have given you a jaundiced view of the bar.
Oh, I should have known. What did you do, make a deal with the judge?
Stan, look, I want you to understand something. The judge and I weren't fighting each other.
You're darn tootin' you weren't. I ought to report you to the Bar Association.
What are you complaining about? The judge ordered probation, didn't he?
It's the principle of the thing. How am I ever going to face Harry after this?
I had a brief to work on at the office that night, and I didn't get home till late. Liz was asleep when I came in. I undressed very quietly, but I fumbled the shoes.
Oh, Ben? Ben, is that you?
Who were you expecting?
Oh, don't be silly. How did the Stankovich boy make out?
Well, the judge took his home situation into consideration. His father's never there, you know.
What happened?
Well, sometimes in a case like this, a child is paroled in someone's custody.
Oh?
The judge explained that a sober, respectable, understanding citizen might give the boy a sense of responsibility and belonging. Somebody to sort of supply the interest and warmth he can't get at home.
That's a very wonderful idea. Where did they find such an impressive citizen?
Oh, it was easy.
It was?
Yeah. Me.
Ben. You mean you?
Me.
Well, what do you have to do?
Very simple. I'm responsible for him. I couldn't back out. You see, I'd made a speech about the responsibility of the citizen.
Oh, Ben.
It won't be so bad. He's a nice boy underneath. Way underneath.
But what do you have to do?
I'm supposed to provide a sense of belonging.
Belonging to what?
Yeah, that's the problem, isn't it? To us, I guess.
For how long?
There's another hearing scheduled in a month.
Well, what will we do with him?
I told him he could hang around here, that I'd take him places, play games with him. He liked that idea.
He did?
Yeah, he gave me the choice of blackjack or seven-card stud. gradually, we got used to the idea of Stanley as a more or less permanent adjunct to the Marriott household. The effects of his coming weren't long in appearing. Pete was the first.
Hi, Mom.
Hello, Pete. Don't drop your jacket on the floor.
I'll hang it up, Mom.
What have you got in your pocket, Pete? It sounded like a flat iron.
A roll of pennies. I got them at the candy store.
What would you want with a roll of pennies?
Dan says nickels are the best.
He does?
I didn't have enough money, though.
What do you use a roll of pennies for, dear?
Anybody knows that. Brass knucks.
Emily?
Yes, Daddy?
If you're going to get home from the movies after 11, you better take a front door key.
Oh, I won't need one, Daddy.
We're going to bed early, dear. I don't want to have to get up to answer the doorbell.
You won't. I'll get in.
Without a key?
It's easy. Stan showed me. You use a bobby pin.
Through it all, there lurked the specter of the unseen Harry, evidently an older or journeyman hoodlum. Harry exercised a good deal of influence and generally made his opinions all too clear.
Harry says you're a jerk.
Oh, he does he?
Yeah. He says you got sucked into this by that judge.
I didn't get sucked into anything. As a matter of fact, very nice having you around.
You don't mean that. I'm a delinquent.
I don't think so.
That's because I've been making a sucker out of you.
Have you?
Well, sure. Harry told me how. Be very good. Real polite. Then you turn in a good report to that loudmouth judge and he takes me off probation. See?
Then why are you telling me about it now?
Because I don't want you to think I've been rehabilitated.
What's wrong with being rehabilitated?
If I wasn't playing choir boy, you wouldn't want me around your house.
Look, nobody's asking you to put on a lace collar and be little Lord Fauntleroy. I just think it pays to stay on the right side of the book. It's what you'd call an angle. Outside of that, I don't care what you do or who you hang around with.
Yeah, that's a lot of talk. If I brought Harry around, you'd throw him out on his ear.
If he's a friend of yours, bring him around.
You'd have him here?
Sure.
Tonight?
Tonight.
Oh, sure. If we do it your way, play 20 questions and duck for apple.
Whatever you want to do.
Poker?
Well, now I...
Uh-huh.
Okay, poker. I think one of the reasons I went on with it was that I was curious to see this Harry. He sauntered in about 10 o'clock and he brought his own deck.
Mr. Marriott, this is Harry.
Hiya.
Hello, Harry. This is Mrs. Marriott.
Hello, Harry.
I don't play poker with dames.
You don't?
Dames take my mind off the game. Know what I mean?
I think so. You're afraid I'm out of your league. You're not big enough to play with girls.
I can play in any league.
Okay, let's start.
What are the stakes?
What do you usually play for?
Nickel, dime, I'll make it easy on you.
All right.
Okay. Here we go.
Oh, how pretty. Can you teach me to do that?
Lady, it takes years. Cut the deal? Go ahead, Stan.
Seven.
Jack.
King.
Well, what do you know? Ace.
Harry smiled as he dealt, a smug, professional smile. He was full of little bursts of spontaneous wit and humor.
Come on, Mr. Marriott, put your money where your mouth is.
Nervous? Or are you in a hurry?
Sure. When this penny any business is over, Stan and I got a real game to go to.
Oh, a rush.
How is Stan, Mr. Marriott? You been a good boy, just like the judge said?
Oh, cut it out, Harry.
Does he get a gold star if he brushes his teeth?
Are you playing cards or talking?
All right, if you want it that way.
I'll take two cards.
I'll take, three.
How about you, Harry?
I'll stand pat.
Liz and I, to put it mildly, didn't do well. It was getting along towards midnight, and we agreed it was the last hand. I had three kings and a queen for a kicker, and I drew another queen.
I fold.
I suppose I do, too.
You gonna bet?
Sure. Here.
See and raise your ten.
And ten?
And ten.
Mm-hmm.
Chicken.
And ten.
Ten again.
All right. You're younger than I am. I'll see you.
Sure.
Three tens. Well, sorry, Harry. I got a full house, king's over. I guess I'll...
Relax, Buster, relax. I got the other ten. That makes four of them.
Four tens?
Yeah, you want to count them? Well, anytime you want another lesson, let me know. Let's go, Stan.
Oh, we'll have some coffee if you'll wait a minute.
No, thank you, lady. Stan.
Yeah, Harry?
You keep this chicken feed. I don't need it.
Gee. Okay, thanks, Harry.
Well, good night, folks. Come on, Stan.
Mr. Marion, I'm sorry. I gotta go.
Go ahead, Stanley. I can't keep you.
Come on, Stan.
Okay, I'm coming.
Well?
Well.
How much was it?
Oh, about $26 and change.
I'm afraid Harry is a little too much for us.
I'm afraid so. I didn't want Stan to think that we looked down on him or his friends. I think it was the other way about.
Ben, tell me something.
Yes?
When you discard cards, are they supposed to go back in the deck?
No.
That's what Harry did. You know that 10 he used in the last hand? I discarded it before.
Well, that... I don't know why we should be surprised.
Stan must have known about it.
I suppose so. Well, we might as well go to bed.
Wait a minute. Wait. Do you hear something?
Who's that?
Me, Mr. Marriott.
Stan.
I wanted to talk to you.
Yes?
It's about Harry. He cheated you.
I know.
He said you were setups. He said we could run rings around you.
I guess you did.
I guess you'll tell a judge.
What should I tell him?
That I'm no good? That I helped cheat you at cards?
Why did you come back, Stan?
It was Harry. He kept laughing. Kept saying how dumb Mr. Marriott was. Well, he said things about you. I told him Mr. Marriott wasn't dumb, that he just looked like he was dumb.
Thank you, Stanley.
I mean, you're a lawyer and you know how to help people. I told him he ought to have respect. He said I sounded as dumb as you.
Thank you, Stan. That's very nice of you.
Well, I guess you gotta turn me in for violation of parole.
No, I think we can just forget about the poker game.
Isn't that? Here, you better take this money.
Oh, no. You want it.
I'll figure it's a down payment. I'll need a lawyer.
Stanley, the case is over. The truancy...
That ain't it. I slugged a guy.
You did?
When?
Just now. Harry.
Harry?
Yeah. He didn't want me to give back the money, so I hit him.
Oh, Stanley.
Boy, he went out like a shot. He's probably still stiff.
That's quite a wallop you packed, Stan.
Why not, with a roll of nickels in my fist? So, Mr. Marriott, it looks like I'm gonna need a little legal help.
Okay, Stan. Okay. You've got yourself a mouthpiece.
The Marriage, on Tuned to Yesterday from December 13th, 1953, on NBC. You're listening to an hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVeonier. Now on to an episode of Rogers of the Gazette, written by Kathleen Height, who also penned many broadcasts of Gunsmoke. Nearly a week before this next broadcast, she adapted the story State Fair for the General Electric Theater radio program on CBS, and about 2 weeks before that, had one of her stories featured on the Movies on the Radio program Lux Radio Theater, though an anomaly, as the story wasn't a motion picture first, called One Last September, though it would be adapted on the small screen on the Jane Wyman Presents the Fireside Theater in 1955. This episode of Rogers of the Gazette was first heard on Mutual on September 16, 1953.
Ladies and gentlemen, the editor of the Elyria Weekly Gazette, Mr. Will Rogers, Jr.
Thank you. You know, we had an important visitor through Elyria the other day. Big diplomat, just back from a meeting. And he told me, these international conferences are just like Arkansas political conventions. Only the food is fancier.
Rogers of the Gazette, offering you again tonight, transcribed, another heartwarming story of a country newspaper and its friendly editor, and starring Will Rogers, Jr. One of the biggest differences between a city and a small town is the degree of nearness. Nearness about everything. In a city, you can be as much a part of its activities and interests and enterprises as you want to, or you can be as remote as you choose. But in a small town, the choice isn't yours to make, really. Distances, people, the doings of the town, its triumphs and its tragedies. All this is nearer. City people put it this way. Everybody knows your business in a small town. To which small town people reply, but it's wonderful to have your friends close by. You're never lonely in a small town. Well, there's room for this difference of opinion. If it didn't exist, we wouldn't have small towns like Elyria, and we wouldn't know people like Will Rogers and Maggie Button.
So the plan now is to have it at the church with picnic tables and the outside games on the side lawn. Then if it should rain or turn cold, we can always go inside and have everything in the church basement.
I'd like to see that. Sack race, tug of war, and baseball game in the church basement.
Well, it might get messy, but no one at the meeting could come up with a better idea.
That's a darn shame. You know, Elyria ought to have a pavilion or a youth center or some kind of a recreation hall.
You think you can get one built by Saturday?
I kind of doubt it. Right now, I'll just settle for a good crowd on Saturday.
Oh, I think people will come, Will. They ought to.
What do they decide about the food?
They're going to auction off box suppers to the grown-ups. Have to raise money some way, but they're still going to furnish hot dogs and hamburgers to the kids.
Everybody bring a box supper for the auction?
Just the women.
And the men bid for them, and the highest bidder gets to eat with the lady who made the supper?
It's always been that way as far as I know.
Just wondered if they were operating under any new rules. Well, that's a tricky business, you know. First off, a man never knows whether the food's going to be worth eating, and after that, he never knows whether the lady that fixed it is going to be worth eating it with.
Well, that's part of the fun, the surprise.
Haven't got a thing in the world against a surprise, but I don't like a shock, especially with my evening meal.
What do you mean a shock?
Well, now, I'd count Letty Parmenter a shock.
Will Rogers. Letty Parmenter is just as nice as she can be, and she's never done a thing to you.
She doesn't do a thing for me either, which is more or less my point.
Will.
Now, I know she's a grand girl and all that, but that infernal giggle of hers is enough to set a man off.
Well, Letty's shy. I think she sort of likes you. That's why she giggles so much when you're around.
Well, you don't have to take off that way on my account.
I saw her at the meeting. She asked especially if you were coming Saturday.
She did not.
She did, too.
Well, now, why on earth would she ask a thing like that?
I told you. I think she likes you.
Will you stop saying that?
Anytime you stop asking me. I wonder if John took any calls while we were out.
Why don't you check him on that, Maggie? I want to call Doc and... Now, what's all this about?
Well, what is it?
Well, it was the editorial I wrote for this week. Wait till I talk to that John. John, doggone it, did you foul up this editorial of mine?
Nope.
What do you mean, no? This is your writing all over the margins, isn't it? And your proof marks all the way through it.
Yep. Those are mine.
Well, what'd you say nope for?
Hey, yes, did I foul up your editorial? I didn't. You did.
You didn't like the editorial, is that it?
That's it.
Well, now, that's just great, because I don't give a hoot whether you liked it or not. And all... John, will you turn off that press a minute? Now, John, I know you've got the interest of the paper at heart and all that, and I appreciate the writing you do for it and the copy reading and all, but you leave my editorials alone.
I got work to do.
Well, then you just do it. And leave my work to me.
When an editorial is forceful and clear, I will leave it to you.
John, I tell you, sometimes you make me so dad blame mad.
Now, you just simmer down and mind who you're talking to. I've been pretty patient with you, all things considered. Every so often, I think you're going to make the grade, and then you turn around and write a watered-down, pussy-footing thing like that. Why, you're lucky I even set it up for you.
Now, John, what's wrong with it?
Well, I ought to just make you sit with it quiet for a while and figure the answer for yourself, only there isn't time for that. We need a good editorial, and I haven't got time to do everything around here.
I'd settle right now if you'd just print the paper.
Point one. You call this shindig coming up Saturday night a benefit for the boys at Willoughby Farm?
Well, that's what it is. All the money that's raised goes to feed and clothe the boys for the coming year. Now, if that's not a benefit, I don't know what it is.
Yeah, point two, you don't know what it is. Folks who read that drivel of yours, they're going to feel holier than thou. A few of them will come and spend a little wad of their money and feel like they've done their bit. Is that what you want?
Sure, I want folks to come and spend their money.
Well, then get them there, the whole blessed town, and a few folks from the county. Tell them who the benefit's really for. Not for those 12 orphan boys who live and work at Willoughby Farm.
Yes, it is, oh, John.
Oh, young darn fool, the benefit's for Elyria. Can't you see that? Benefit and taxes they won't have to pay because these 12 boys won't ever be delinquent. That's just the beginning of the benefit to the town, but it's one they'll understand.
Well, you think I should shame folks into coming?
Oh, if that approach makes them feel shame, then it's the guilt of their own conscience. All in the wide world this town does for those boys is to hold this shindig once a year and pat the boys on the head and give them the proceeds, which Cora Willoughby will tell you, if you inquire, doesn't begin to cover the expenses of operating the farm.
Are you sure about that, John?
I'm a newspaper man. I don't say or print anything I don't know for sure. And for sure, no one has gone out to Willoughby Farm to see how they were getting on since the last measly box supper, except Doc. Now, get out of here and write something that hits home. I got work to do.
John?
Eh?
You really feel keen about this subject, don't you?
Well, I said how I feel.
I'm real glad you feel that way, John.
What?
Because at the men's committee meeting just now, they were wondering who was proper to make the talk to the boys at the box supper. And I told them I'd try and find the right man, and I think I found him.
Oh, now, see here. What I say to you is one thing. But...
the benefit is for Elyria,
no,
John.
No, wait a minute, no. I'm no kind of a talker, except when I'm riled.
It's not till Saturday. You can spend all that time getting riled.
No, Will. Oh. John Reed, you talk too dad blame much.
Okay, Maggie. I give up. Where'd you put it this time?
Put what?
The copy paper.
Wait a minute.
Maggie, we use copy paper every day. How come you keep it locked up?
Because last week we used 7 reams, and the week before 9 reams, and the week before
7 reams? 9 reams? Why, Maggie, at 500 sheets a ream,
516 sheets a ream. I'll bet we're running neck and neck with the New York dailies, and we publish a 6-page paper once a week.
Why, that's crazy.
It's worse than that. It's expensive. You haven't taken any home or given any to anybody, have you?
No, I haven't. We don't use it in the shop.
Well, with John living in the press room the way he does, burglary seems a little out of the question.
If I haven't taken it, you haven't taken it.
It leaves John. Only I asked him about it. He said he didn't do any of the writing around here, just the rewriting.
He has a small point. But he didn't say he didn't take the paper.
Well, he didn't say he did. John wouldn't take it. That's ridiculous.
Well, he wouldn't steal it. He'd be stealing. But he's a funny old goat, Maggie. A year ago, I'd have said he wouldn't tell me how to write editorials either. But you just can't tell about John.
Well, I'm not going to mention it to him again.
Well, I'll do it. A little later on, maybe. John and I had our run-in for the week yesterday.
Hello, Daddy.
Miss
Button.
Good afternoon. Hello, Jill, honey.
Hello,
Howdy,
you
Doc.
Too.
My girlfriend here has a problem. I can't answer it for her exactly, so I decided to bring her to an authority.
Well, now, Jill, what do you want to know?
I want to know it from Miss Button. She's the authority.
That's my girl.
Makes you feel great, doesn't it, Will?
Oh, I'm getting kind of used to it, Doc. I've been bowing to higher authorities and better minds all week.
Well, I hope I can help, Jill. What is it?
About box suppers. What do you put in them? Where do you get the box? Now, how can you mark your box so somebody special will recognize it and be sure to buy it so you can eat with them.
Can I have that one at a time, sweetie?
I don't think I'm not going to mind being an authority after all.
Daddy, this is ladies' talk. If you and Doc were real gentlemen, you'd excuse yourselves. Let us have our conversation.
Well, Doc.
Will you excuse me, ladies?
Ladies. Excuse me, too. Where to, Doc?
Well, I've got to leave some prescriptions at Epperson. In addition to which, being a natural-born gentleman, I would, of course, treat you to a nickel drink if you'd care to come along.
Now, that's real kind of you. And being a gentleman myself, I wouldn't offend you by refusing.
My, it takes a long time to be a gentleman, doesn't it, Miss Button?
In some cases, Jill, it takes a lifetime.
After you, Doctor.
Thank you kindly, Mr. Rogers.
They're funny, aren't they?
Sometimes funny, sometimes downright peculiar. Now, you want to know what to put in a box supper, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Something Daddy would like especially.
Well, I think fried chicken would be nice, and, if you get Mrs. Weatherwax to help you, she'll wrap some hot rolls with butter on them. And,
a pickled peach?
Fine. And he likes coleslaw.
And chocolate cake.
That's right. And they'll have coffee and milk there at the church. I think that would do fine, Jill.
Fried chicken, hot rolls,
mm-hmm.
Pickled peach, chocolate cake, coleslaw. Will that be enough?
Oh, I think so.
Now then, how do you mark your box so it'd be sure to bid on it?
Well, if I wanted someone special to buy my box supper, I think I'd tie it with them. Oh, a different kind of a ribbon. Most people use red ribbon or blue. Maybe a yellow ribbon, like when you have in your hair. That's what I'd do. Tie it with a yellow ribbon, and then I'd talk a lot about yellow ribbons in front of him. Just sort of hope he got the idea.
Well, maybe. Only, do you think Daddy would get the idea? I mean, I'd want to be so sure.
Well, I tell you. Suppose we both talk about yellow ribbons in front of him. Do you think that would do it?
Oh, yes, if you'd help me.
Of course I will, sweetie.
Gee, that's swell.
Well, now, that wasn't so hard to fix, was it?
No, thanks to you, Miss Button. And she'll be so pleased.
Hmm?
I just know it means a lot to her. Now I can tell her what he likes to eat and how to mark the box. Now you'll talk about yellow ribbons, too.
Jill, honey, who'll be so pleased?
Letty Parmenter.
Letty? You're not making up this box supper for your daddy? I mean, we're going to talk him into bidding for Letty Parmenter's supper?
Mm-hmm. She's such a good cook, and Daddy deserves a good meal.
Well, I think you're right, sweetie. I think your daddy deserves the whole thing.
Morning, Maggie. Shh. What's the matter?
Shh. Come back here, very quietly.
What are you listening to, Maggie?
I'm not sure. You listen and tell me. Here, I'll open the door just a little bit more.
I see. Yep, equivocation and... No. Well, let's try again now.
No.
If fellow Illyrians, old folks, young people... I've been asked to say a few words to you tonight because... No, that's a fool idea anyway. Me talking there in front of all those people. They don't know me. I don't know them. That's a fool idea. Well, I shut my face off to Will. I'll try again. Young people, kids. Now listen, kids. I got a speech here, and, as far as I'm concerned, you can take it and blame the half-wit idea.
Poor old John. He's been going on like that ever since I came in this morning.
Man, I wouldn't miss this box supper for anything in the world. After all the bad times John's given me, I'm going to plant myself right up there in the front row and give him an awful time of it.
I feel sorry for him.
Don't you do it. Anyone can unload as many opinions on me as he does. You can just stand up there and make them public.
Well, you got to admit it. His editorial has changed everyone's attitude about what kind of a benefit this is tomorrow night.
Yeah, you bet it has. You know that old guy. If I ever learn a tenth as much about newspapers as he knows, I'll be in line for the Pulitzer Prize.
You didn't happen to ask him about the copy paper?
No. He's got enough problems right now. Well, I'll do that as soon as he gets his speech out of his system. Never saw you wear a hair ribbon before, Maggie.
No. No, you didn't. I never thought I was the type. But just recently, I sort of thought I'd like to try it.
Looks nice.
Thank you. It's yellow.
Yeah, I see that it is.
I don't think there's anything like a yellow ribbon. Do you?
Oh, I don't know, Maggie. They're nice enough as ribbons go, but to tell you the truth, ribbons don't mean much to me one way or another.
They will.
How's that?
I just mean, maybe they'll come to mean something to you. I started to say maybe they'll grow on you, but that'd be silly.
Yeah, it would. Funny thing, you know, Jill had a yellow ribbon on this morning at breakfast.
Isn't that a coincidence?
I guess so. She went on and on about it, and did I notice it, and told me it was yellow, and just like you did, as if I was colorblind or something. And kept at it, you know, like there was something special all of a sudden about a yellow ribbon.
Well, all I know is the very best things I've ever received in boxes were tied with yellow ribbon.
I don't understand it. Just this morning, I've been giving more thought and attention to yellow ribbons than I have in my whole life up to now. I just never knew there was so much to them.
Well, I hope we haven't overdone it. I mean, I hope you won't tire of yellow ribbons soon.
Oh, it's not that important. It's just funny, that's all.
Uh-huh. By the way, these mats came this morning.
Well, I'll take them back to John and check them over with him. He ought to be through rehearsing by now. John, these news service mats come in this morning, and I... John... Hey, John, where are you? John, I... Good Lord. Maggie, call Doc. Something's happened to John.
That's it, Will. Easy does it now.
He weighs more than he looks like he does.
Yeah, under the bed now. You see, he's quite a load. Now then, let me take a look.
Is he unconscious, Doc?
Fainted, maybe. This stuff ought to bring him around.
Well, Doc, if he ought to be in the hospital or anything, I sure want him to be there.
We'll see, we'll see.
Anything I can do?
Yes, you can stand back out of my light, for one thing.
Oh, sorry.
And get some water from the cooler over there, will
sure,
you?
Sure, sure. Here you go, Doc.
Thanks. And quit shaking. You'll spill all over.
Yeah. Sorry, Doc, but I...
Yeah, I know, I know. Now, just keep your head. Here, now, see if we can take a swallow of this.
Sounds like he's hurt, Doc. Maybe hit his head or something when he fell.
Yeah, there are no bruises that I can see. Let me check his pulse. Here. A little better.
Looks like he's trying to say something.
What happened? Where?
Now, take it easy, John. Don't try to talk.
Is it okay if I officiate here, Dr. Rogers?
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
Thank you very much.
Is that you, Doc?
Yeah. How's it going, John?
Oh, spots before my eyes. Headache. Oh, it's awful. Weak. Very weak.
Yeah, seems very weak, too. Well, this is pretty bad, I think.
Is it, Doc?
Oh,
yes, sir. It's a pretty bad case, all right.
Golly, Doc, you know, I don't know what to say. Poor old devil, you know. It's not right for him to be living in a corner of the press room. It seems like I ought to have had a better place to live, you know. I feel now like I ought to have insisted he stayed up at the house with Jill and me. We could have looked after
him. Don't
lay
yourself bare, Will. Just be glad you were on hand. I know I wouldn't have missed this for anything.
What's the matter with you, Doc?
Worst case of it I ever saw. Or haven't you ever had stage fright?
Stage fright?
Complicated by the desperations. You'd try anything to get out of giving that speech tomorrow night, wouldn't you, John?
You're darn right I wouldn't.
Doc, are you sure?
I never had a pulse as good as his when I was a growing boy.
Well,
You can both get out of here now. I got work to do.
John Reed, someday I... What kind of a shabby trick was this anyway?
Right on a par with that speech-making trick you pulled on me. Now, get out of here before I pick one of you up and knock the other down.
Don't cross him, Will. He could do it. Oh, there you are, Maggie. Some doings, isn't it?
I never saw such a crowd. I've just checked with all the concessions and game booths. They're all doing a booming business.
Yeah, they'll make a hat full of money for the boys tonight, all right. Haven't seen John anywhere, have you?
No, and I don't especially want to see him.
Oh, now, Maggie, he gave us a bad scare yesterday pulling that swooning act of his, but I think we can forgive him for that.
It's not that. Let's not talk about it now. I think I'll wander over by the box supper booth and see if they need any help.
Stick around. John ought to be giving his big speech any time now. We want to be right up in the front row.
I'll hear it all right.
What's wrong, Maggie?
Well, I don't think this is the time to go into it, Will.
Oh, come on now. Something's chewing away at you. You better tell me about it.
Well, I don't know what to make of it exactly, but... Well, I should have minded my own business, only... I wanted him to feel right about making the talk tonight and all.
John?
Uh-huh. I didn't know whether he'd have a clean shirt or a tie, so I just went back to his diggings in the press room late this afternoon when he was out. I looked in that old trunk of his. Oh, I wish I'd never started this.
Come on now, Maggie.
Will, he must have 20 reams of copy paper stashed away in that trunk.
Well, what on earth would John want with it?
I don't know, but he's got it. And what bothers me, he's been so darn sneaky about it. Taking it a little bit at a time, never once asking either one of us for it.
I don't understand it at all.
I don't either. I didn't want to tell you tonight, Will, but...
No, that's all right. I ought to know about it.
Ladies and gentlemen, folks, if you'll just quiet down now...
Is Doc going to introduce John?
I guess so.
Thank you kindly. I have the honor to introduce Mr. John Reed of the Elyria Weekly Gazette. He's been asked to give us the benefit of a few choice words. Come on out, John.
Oh, never mind that. Never mind. What I have to say won't take long. And don't get set to laugh. I'm not a hand to be funny. You hear a lot nowadays about underprivileged kids. Yeah, I heard someone on the street the other day referred to the boys at Willoughby Farm as underprivileged kids. I say that's not so. We got a few underprivileged adults in town who ought to take time out and learn something about the privileged kids out at Cora Willoughby's. That's right, privileged kids. They got their youth, their lives ahead of them, the chance to work, dream, and a lifetime to do it in. I call that privilege. And I say some of us underprivileged adults ought to know more about these youngsters. No, never mind that. Now, me... And Mr. Rogers, we run the Weekly Gazette, and we decided that you boys ought to have your own column in the paper every week to give us the privilege of knowing more about you. So, me and Mr. Rogers, we want to give you boys that lifetime supply of copy paper stacked over there on the right side of the stage. Now, write us anything that's on your mind. We'll see it gets in the paper. Me and Mr. Rogers, and, thanks, I guess.
Well, I'll be. Hey, Maggie, where are you going?
Off somewhere. Have a nice sneaky cry.
Bye.
talking box duffer, tied with a big yellow ribbon.
I'll bid a dollar, Maggie.
Well, you come on sort of strong, don't you, Will?
$1 from Mr. Will Rogers. Do I hear a higher bid?
$2.
Ooh, bidding against yourself? What's the matter with you?
I gotta buy this supper, Doc. It's either Maggie's or Jill's.
$2. Do I hear three?
$3, Maggie. Whoa. And let's start closing it out there, huh?
You're pretty sure it's Maggie's or Jill's.
Going.
Yeah, they've been talking about nothing but yellow ribbons to me for 4 days.
Going.
And that's the only supper box up there with a yellow ribbon on it.
Sold to Mr. Will Rogers for
$3. $3.
Will the lady who made this supper take it to Mr. Rogers?
Will, son, try to remember that this is a benefit for Elyria, will you, boy?
Sure, Doc, only... Oh, my God, no!
Mr. Rogers, you want me!
Yeah, go on, Letty, just let yourself go. I feel a little hysterical myself.
You've just heard Rogers of the Gazette, starring Mr. Will Rogers, Jr., with Georgia Ellis as Maggie Button.
Rogers of the Gazette, on Tuned to Yesterday from September 16, 1953 on NBC. And that wraps up this hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for tuning in.